All right, we're going to move on now to Matthew 12. And remember, we're at a critical juncture in Jesus' ministry here. He's going to start deliberately steering away from the vain religious system, and he's going to focus his ministry and his teachings now on that believing remnant that have come out so far through John the Baptist and Jesus' ministry, and he's going to focus his teaching on them. The vain religious system has rejected his teaching, has rebelled against God, rejected his teaching, rejected the ministry of John the Baptist. They threw him in jail. They rejected the ministry of Jesus. And we saw that in chapter 11 when Jesus calls down condemnation and woes and curses on the cities where him and the 12 have been ministering, have been preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and he calls down woes on them because that vain religious system has been able to steer the cities away, steer the people away. They're somewhat responsive. The multitudes recognize, it said in Matthew 9 and 10, that nothing like this has ever gone on before in Israel. Anything like this. This Israelite's different from all other Israelites. But then the vain religious system, we saw in chapter 11, comes in. And they take everything John taught, everything Jesus taught, they manipulate it like a piece of Play-Doh, and they reform it, and they twist it, and turn it into something that God never intended. John came mourning, he came piping, he came playing a sad song, calling on the nation because of their sinfulness and rebelliousness to return to the Lord, repent, and enter into Israel's cleansing program, beginning with his water baptism. And he comes and he's teaching, and they say he has a devil because he's dressed in like Elijah and in animal clothes and eating locusts. And then Jesus comes, he's playing a happy tune. He's playing a merry tune. He's rejoicing. The king is here. The kingdom's at hand. All prophecies ready to be fulfilled. He's the bridegroom. He's banqueting. He's feasting. And they say he's a glutton and a wine bibber, a drunk. He comes along and interacts with sinners so he can save them. The vain religious system comes and says, look, he interacts with sinners. He must be a sinner. He can't be a man of God. He comes casting out devils. And the vain religious system comes and twists that and says, he must be a servant of Satan. They chase everything, and they've been able to pull the people away, pull the cities away, and pull them away from Jesus. So now Jesus is going to stop interacting with them. We see that, let's just go back at the end of chapter 11 and just see this as we wrap up, because this will lead into chapter 12. Let's just bring back to our memory. Let's go down Matthew 11:25. At that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and the prudent and hast revealed them to babes. He's going to now begin, and he has been doing this to an extent, but he's going to begin now to hide these things from that vain religious system. They've rejected him. They've turned from him. He's going to hide these things, and he's going to reveal them to babes, that believing remnant. His followers, the disciples, the 12. Even so, Father, verse 26, for so it seemed good in thy sight, And this is going to become an important topic. We've talked about this before. Mark makes much of the secrecy concept. He stops teaching the vain religious system. He turns away from them. He hides these things from them. And one reason, of course, he's doing it primarily because they've rejected and are rebelling against him. But there's another reason. He's doing this now so when he gets on that cross, he can pray a prayer to the Father that says, forgive them, for they didn't know what they were doing. He, on that cross, he's going to use their ignorance to allow him to reduce the charge of the nation as a whole from murder to manslaughter, so that they, giving them another chance at Pentecost, after he's raised from the dead, he's going to give them another chance to receive him at Pentecost. He's going to set up a city of refuge at Pentecost through the ministry of the Holy Spirit and Peter and the 12. He's going to set up a city of refuge, and he's going to give the nation another opportunity because of their ignorance to receive him again. And of course, we know the third time at Pentecost, he was rejected too. But that's the idea. He's going to hide these things. He's going to keep them in ignorance so he can turn the charge against them from first degree murder to manslaughter and give the nation another chance at Pentecost. All right, so let's go ahead and we'll finish this up from last week. Jesus turns away from the vain religious system, begins focusing on the children of the kingdom, that believing remnant. That's what we just read. And you can read more about this in Isaiah 28. We won't turn there now. Now Jesus is the receptacle of all good things, not the vain religious system. He's going to show now in chapter 12, this is the key to chapter 12, that's why I backed up a little. He's going to show now the utter and complete bankruptcy of the vain religious system. See, his followers and everybody in Israel have been taught, if you want to participate and receive God's things, you have to go to the religious system. That's where God's things are deposited. That's where God's word has been entrusted. And now Jesus is going to come along and he's going to say, get that out of your mind. Where God has deposited all his things now is in me, in Jesus. Don't go to that vain religious system for the things of God. Come to me for the things of God. Verse 27 of chapter 11. Verse 27, Matthew 11. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father, neither knoweth any man the Father, save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal them. If you want to know the Father and the Father to know them, they were not to go to that vain religious system, which he's going to prove in chapter 12 is completely bankrupt and doesn't know anything about God's things. He's going to now say, you have to come to me. And let's just finish the last couple verses in chapter 11. Come to me. I'm the receptacle of all God's things. All ye that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Notice this key word here, rest. 29, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What he's bringing their attention to is this rest concept, which plays a huge factor in not only Israel, but the whole earth. And that's what we'll look at a little bit quickly. So Jesus is now the receptacle of all things. They needed to come to him, not the vain religious system, for the rest, Israel's long prophesied rest. And of course, that's ultimately fulfilled in the rest of that kingdom, that earthly kingdom of Israel that they're going to be ushered into at his second coming, and they're going to be ushered into that kingdom. So they needed to come to him, not the vain religious system. For rest. Jesus is the one who will lead him in the kingdom. What was the vain religious system saying? We read this earlier. They said, we're the ones that have the nation, and we're the ones who are going to lead the nation into that kingdom. Jesus comes along and he's going to say, no, I'm going to give the nation to this believing remnant, and I'm going to rip the kingdom out of your hands and usher them into it. Everything now revolves around Christ and his cross and what's coming up and how he's now the receptacle of all things. And now when we get into chapter 12, he's going to prove it. So let's go down to verse 1 of chapter 12. This leads right into chapter 12 with the controversy about the day of rest. He's going to do some things now in the first half of Matthew 12, and he's going to do some things here, and they're going to happen on the Sabbath. Now look, you notice how this flows right from chapter 11. At the end of chapter 11, he said, all you have to come to me if you want to participate in God's rest. And now he Matthew 12 opens up and he begins doing things on the Sabbath day. What's the Sabbath day? It's a day of rest. And he's going to start doing some things here now in order to demonstrate the complete and utter bankruptcy of the vain religious system. And look how he does this as we go through here. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea, though, first, to just kind of get a little bit of the history on the Sabbath. The Sabbath, and I just put some points up here to kind of bring out the highlights. We're not going to do a complete study of the Sabbath and all the different times and all that kind of stuff. We're going to focus just generally on the Sabbath and what it meant as far as God and his creation and the nation of Israel. So the Sabbath, first of all, was a sign between Jehovah and creation that he would dwell in it. Let's just keep a bookmark here in Matthew 12, and let's just go look at a couple verses about this time of rest, the Sabbath. Go to Genesis 2. Genesis 2. We probably all know this without even having to turn here, but he's just completed his creation. Look at I guess it would be good to read the last verse of chapter 1. This is Genesis 1, verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. He's created all things. Everything is good. And now look what he's going to do. Chapter 2, Genesis 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, set it apart for his purposes, because that in it he had rested from all his work which the God created and made. That's what he did. He set that up. He set up this day of rest. He didn't rest because he was tired. He didn't rest because he needed a rest. He rested because he was done with his work. And now he was ready to come and dwell on the earth, dwell in his creation, dwell on the earth. And we're going to see what this involved. But the idea here is he wanted to dwell on the earth to enjoy it, to be restored in it, to be feast, be part of feasting and enjoyment and dwelling in it, in his creation. Kind of maybe one way to think of it would be like a vacation resort. This was going to be his vacation. He'd come and he's going to come and he's going to rest and he's going to enjoy him and his people, and he's going to restore things. Everybody's going to be restored and have rest. But then what happens? Chapters 2 and 3, what happens? Sin enters his creation. Sin through Adam and Eve, sin entered the earth. And now you don't hear anything about the Sabbath rest and rest for 2,500 years. So let's go word next. Sin entered, and for 2,500 years went by before it was mentioned again in Exodus 16. And that's when he created the nation of Israel. Let's go over to Exodus. We won't go to 16, but let's go to Exodus 31. Exodus 31. And let's just look at when now he brings up this idea of a rest, a day of rest, the Sabbath. And let's look at what it was supposed to be. And this will be a good background for when we get to Matthew 12 to see when we see how that vain religious system was using it. So in Exodus, we have the deliverance out of the land of Egypt. The God came and he delivered them. And at that time, he gave them back that day of rest, that Sabbath day. And let's look and see what it was supposed to be. On the one hand, this day of rest was supposed to be a sign between creation and Jehovah, that he would dwell in his creation. Now let's take it a step further. 2,500 years have gone by. The world has been suffering under sin and death. And now he creates a new nation, his own nation, the nation of Israel. And look what he says here in Exodus 31, verse 12. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak you unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily, my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generation, that you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you. Remember in Genesis 2, he talked about sanctifying the day. Now he's sanctifying the nation of Israel. For ye shall keep the Sabbath, verse 14, ye shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Every one that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among the people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath. And what is this Sabbath supposed to be? It's supposed to be a time of rest. He says, 6 days you may work, and the seventh is a Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doth any work in the Sabbath, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout the generations for a perpetual covenant. You get the idea? They weren't supposed to overlook this day of rest. And why? Verse 17, it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. And now he goes back. There's that sign concept. And he goes back to Genesis 2. For in 6 days, this is Exodus 31, 17, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. It's important to see this is what the vain religious system was missing. The vain religious system was missing that there's a reason God gave this day. Not so people could continue to suffer, not so people could not be healed who were sick, so that hungry people couldn't be fed. Just to say you had 1 day following some legalistic regulation. The reason for the Sabbath is that it's supposed to be a day of rest, a day of refreshing. That's what the vain religious system was missing. And then we're going to reach a high point on that as we go through our message here. So it's resting and refreshing. Let's go look at one other place. Go to flip over to Leviticus on our way back to Matthew. Leviticus 23. Let's see what it's associated with. This Sabbath day that is a sign between that God will, between creation and God, that he will dwell in his creation, and a sign between Israel and God because he's going to dwell in his creation by dwelling in the nation of Israel. And with Israel and through her rise, he's going to dwell in the whole earth. Look at Leviticus, one last thing here, Leviticus 23:2. Leviticus 23:2. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, Concerning the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be a holy convocation, holy get-togethers, group activities here, even these are my feasts, 6 days. Now, in the context of this feasting, he talks about the Sabbath. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. See, it's not a Sabbath of suffering. It's not a Sabbath of continuing in difficulty. And it's a Sabbath designed to provide rest and a holy convocation. It's a time for Israelites to get together and praise and worship God and rest in him and be restored in him. It's a time of feasting. not a time of going hungry. And that's going to bring us now back into Matthew 12, where we'll see Jesus on the Sabbath feeding his disciples. So let's go back, head back to the New Testament, and or at least what we traditionally call the New Testament. And let's just note a couple other things. We won't turn to Mark 2 now, but I have it here in the notes. The Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's to provide rest and restoration and refreshing and enjoyment with God for man. Man isn't the slave of Sabbath. The Sabbath is to serve man, to restore him. And Isaiah, well, let's go back to Isaiah 58. Let's just look at one last thing in the Old Testament. Isaiah 58, verse 13. I'm just trying to bring out the main purpose behind the Sabbath. And then when we see how the vain religious system uses the Sabbath, you'll see that they have no idea about God's true intentions and purposes. They're a vain religious system. They're bankrupt. That's what Jesus is trying to teach in chapter 12. So let's just look at Isaiah 58. If you're not there, if you already went up to Matthew, I'll just read it. Chapter 58, verse 13. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasures, but speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord. It was a time to delight in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed thee, and I will feed thee. This is what Jesus is going to do in Matthew 12, feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. So we get this picture of the Sabbath. It's a time of rest. It's a time of holy convocation, getting together, being restored, being energized, praising, worshiping, enjoying God, delighting in God. Now let's go back, head towards Matthew, go a little past it, and let's just read one more thing from Hebrews. See if we can go to Hebrews here and finish off our little mini summary of the Sabbath. And now in Hebrews, of course, we are going our prophetic timeline to the end times, to that tribulation period and on into that kingdom. And he talks about the Sabbath again, only now it's right here. Only now what he talked about in Genesis 2, what he talked about to Moses in Exodus, what he talked about David to in the Psalms, what he's been talking about this time of rest through the prophets, all that they looked ahead for it. They looked and anticipated it and prayed for it and wanted it. Now in Hebrews, it's here. The day we've come to the point. It's here. Enter into the rest by faith. And let's just read a few verses here. Hebrews 4. Hebrews 4, we'll just pick it up at verse 1. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. And how do you come short of entering into his rest? Verse 2. For unto us was the gospel preached. God came along through various people, and he preached the gospel to the Israelites. And just like Abraham, hundreds of years before, God preached good news to Abraham. He believed it, and his faith was counted for righteousness. And here, the gospel of the kingdom now, it's been preached to them. And those who believe, let's see, we'll finish the verse. For unto us the gospel was preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. They didn't believe it. Most of the nation is not going to believe it. They're going to follow that vain religious system we see going to work in Matthew 12. That's going to be picked up in that tribulation, and they're going to draw away, and people are going to turn away from that gospel and not enter into the rest then. For we, verse 3, for we which have believed do enter into rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest by faith, although the works were finished from the foundation of the earth. Now he takes it all the way back to Genesis 2 that we read earlier. For he spake, verse 4, in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place, so now he takes you all the way back to the beginning of the Bible, all the way back to Genesis 2, the beginning of creation. And now he takes us to David. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remains, it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limited a certain day, saying to David now, we've gone from Genesis 2 to David. Today, after so long a time, he went all the way back to the creation of the world, all the way back to Moses in Exodus, all the way back to David, and now that day has come. The day of rest. Today, after so long, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice and harden not your hearts, for Jesus hath given them rest. Then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? So now it's that other day. There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. And that's what Jesus here at the end of Matthew 11, he's inviting them into that rest. They won't find it in the vain religious system. They'll only find it in him who is the receptacle of all God's things. So now let's go back and pick up Matthew 12 with that bit of background. All right, so now we get to the vain religious system. And just to start, before we read it, the vain religious system claimed to be operating according to Moses and were experts in the scripture and the law. Jesus reveals that they aren't. Three times in this passage, he's going to say, haven't you read? Haven't you read? Don't you know? Now, it's important to keep in mind that this vain religious system, these Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadducees, all that, they claim to be experts on the scriptures, teachers of the scriptures. They claim to be experts and teachers of the law. And Jesus comes along and he totally obliterates their cover. He totally rips the cover and shows there's nothing inside. It's a vain religious system. And let's watch how he does this. Go ahead and let's read the first verse of chapter 12. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day, the day of rest. Remember, chapter 11, he just called everybody to come to him for rest. And now he's going to do things on the day of rest, and the Sabbath day, and he's going to show them some things, teach them some things. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck the ears of corn and eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath. But he, Jesus, said unto them, have you not read? See, now we take that lightly. We don't think much of that. But he's saying, have you not read the scriptures to this religious system in Israel that claimed to be the experts on the scriptures? This is a full frontal attack of Jesus on the vain religious system that was producing a counter-doctrinal system that was leading the nation away from him. He's going to show some things now. He says, haven't you read the scriptures about David? And he's going to bring that out. He's saying, haven't you read? Don't you know? Are you ignorant of the scriptures? Didn't you read the scriptures that talked about David? Now let's read verse 3. But he said unto them, have you not read what David did when he was a-hungered, and they that were with him, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? See, he comes in now and he's going to show the complete bankruptcy of this vain religious system. Are you the experts of the scriptures? He's saying you're ignorant of the scriptures. He's exposing the bankruptcy. And what he's doing this for his followers so they realize they don't need to go back to that vain religious system for God's things as they'd always been taught. They need to come up to him to receive those things. David and his followers, I was thinking of turning back to 1 Samuel, but I don't think we'll do it at this time. David, I'll just give a kind of a recap, a little summary. David and his followers, remember, they were traveling through the land of Israel. And why were they traveling? They were being persecuted by Saul, the people's king, not God's king, the people's king. And he's the usurper on the throne. God chose David and Saul's on the throne. He's a usurper. And he comes, in order to protect his kingship, he comes and pursues David and to persecute him. David and his followers are fleeing, I guess you could say, the vain political system in the usurper King Saul. And they're tired, they're hungry, they go into the house of God and they eat the showbread on the Sabbath. Now, we know it's the Sabbath because in Leviticus, it says that one of the things that happened on the Sabbath is they put out the showbread. And he comes, and it's on the Sabbath, they eat the showbread, yet they were blameless. And Jesus' point is here is that if they could do that, now the Son of David was here with his followers. And they were hungry. They were being persecuted. They were being driven off. There's a usurper religious system in Israel. There's a usurper king in Israel. And they're both trying to get him, whether it's Herod or whether it's that vain leaders of that vain religious system. And they're fleeing and they're on the move and they're moving about the land. And he feeds his follower, himself and his followers, as we go through there. The Son of David was here. If David could do that with his followers fleeing the usurper King Saul, Jesus can do it with his followers traveling through the land, now being pursued by the vain religious system and the usurpers of God's nation and kingdom. And they too are blameless for picking grain when they were hungry. That's the vanity of this vain religious system. They don't know their scriptures, he's saying. Look at what David did. And look what we're doing. We're the same situation, and only a bigger one, because I'm the Son of David. God himself enfleshed in the line of David. I'm the long-promised one, the king of Israel. What the person David looked forward to. I'm here with my followers. We're being persecuted. We're being pursued. And we're eating. And we're not even eating the showbread in the temple. We're eating some grain in a field. So if it's not, they're blameless, is what he's going to bring out here. All right, let's look at the next one. You're going to see the progression as we go through these. Now he's going to say, are you ignorant of the law? Now remember, don't take this lightly. He's saying this to a vain religious system who claimed to be the experts and scholars and teachers of the law. And he comes along, haven't you ever read the law? This is a complete ripple of the phony cover that vain religious system has put over their religious system. He's ripping the cover off and showing there's nothing inside. Look at verse 5. Or have you not known? Or have you not read in the law? Don't you know? Haven't you read? You claim to be experts and scholars on the law. Have you ever read it? And he says, how that on the Sabbath days, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath. The priests in the temple keep working on the Sabbath. Yet they are blameless. They profane the Sabbath. They work on the Sabbath and are blameless. And of course, his point is here that they're ignorant of the law. They haven't seen. They haven't put this together. They've forgotten some things about the regulation of the Sabbath. The priests in the temple continue to work on the Sabbath. They're doing God's work, and that's allowed. They're blameless for that. Well, now Jesus, the king priest in the line of Melchizedek, we could go see that again in Hebrews. Now the king priest is here with his followers doing God's work on the Sabbath. And they're just as much as the priests in the temple. They're blameless if they're hungry in their service to God to be restored, to rest, to be restored on the Sabbath. Here we have the king priest has arrived, and what can you say about his followers, that believing remnant? What are they going to be? Maybe it'd be a good idea to keep a bookmark here and go to 1 Peter. 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 9. Look who were here. Christ is the priest king, and what are his followers? Verse 9. 1 Peter 2 verse 9. But ye are a chosen generation. Remember, we looked at the generation last week. They were piping to this generation and they weren't responding. Here's the generation that did respond. A royal what? A royal priesthood. And a holy nation, a peculiar people, and so forth as he goes down there. That's what his followers are going to be. They're the priesthood. They're the ones who are going to make up the priesthood in that kingdom. We could go all the way back to Exodus 19 and see they were to be a royal priesthood and a nation, a holy nation. And now this priesthood, the king, a king priest, Jesus, and his followers, who would maybe the priest make up the priesthood of the restored nation of Israel, were there doing the Lord's work on the Sabbath, and they ate. They were free to eat. It was blameless for them to eat. There's a bigger thing that supersedes the external legal requirements of the Sabbath. One is that we saw in the case of David was human suffering, hunger, thirst, that kind of thing, sickness, illness. In the next section, which we're not going to get to today, Jesus on the Sabbath is going to heal a man. Here he's feeding his disciples. And the second thing is that the priesthood, the doing God's work, supersedes the external legal requirements of that Sabbath day. Let's look at the third one here now. And here's the most important one, because this gets to the background of everything else. This gets back to what I tried to emphasize when we looked at those Old Testament passages of what the purpose of the Sabbath is. It's not a external legal requirement to make people suffer an extra day when they don't need to make people sick longer, to make people suffer longer, or cause difficulty longer, or leave people someplace where they might die just for the sake of keeping one more day some legal requirement. The purpose, God's purpose for the Sabbath was to provide rest, restoration, refreshing, enjoyment of Him and His people. And this vain religious system were taken, they were ignorant of all that. And they were just looking at the external, and they didn't care if people suffered. They didn't care if people... Let's look at the next one. And this is the most important one, because now we get to the heart of the matter. Now we get to the heart of the matter. All right, he's going to ask him, are you ignorant again? Don't you know? Verse 7. Well, let's read verse 6 because this kind of ties in. Remember, he talked about David, and the point is now the son of David's here, a greater than David's here. He talked about the priesthood. Well, now a greater than the priesthood is here, the king priest himself and his people, which are going to be the priesthood in that restored nation. For the verse 6, but I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple, greater than the service, greater than David, greater than, he's going to talk about being greater than Solomon, greater than all this. Verse 7, but if you had known what this meaneth. Now he's going to quote a verse, Hosea 6:6. Now you get the emphasis of what he's saying here. These are the people who claim to know the scriptures inside and out, and to be able to teach others, be light to the blind, and all that kind of stuff. And look what Jesus says of them. But if you had known what this verse means. Notice the progression we go to here. When it comes to David, it's kind of the whole scriptures. Don't you know the scriptures, the whole scriptures? And then the second case, he narrows it down to the law. Don't you know the law? And now he narrows it down to Hosea 6:6. One little teeny tiny eensy weensy teeny, and I counted them, and now I can't remember how many words. I think it was 6 or 7 word verse. And he's saying, they don't even know that. This is what the verse says. Verse 7, but if you had known what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice. What is that? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. He's gone from, you don't know the scriptures, you don't know the law, you don't even know one teeny tiny little verse in Hosea 6:6. See what he's doing? He's ripping the cover off. This is a vain religious system. They're bankrupt. They're not the receptacle of God's things. They don't know anything about what God's doing. It's all a charade. It's all a theatrics. But if you had known, verse 7, what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice. Ye would not have condemned the guiltless. So he's going to bring out, now he brings in that mercy concept. He's gone, he's going to bring out, now this is the mercy in the Hosea 6:6. The word for mercy here is hesed, and that is the key word for the Davidic covenant. That's what God promised to the nation of Israel. He would deal with them on the basis of hesed. Mercy is the way I think it's usually translated, but it really means much more than that. It's some people are trying to encapsulate everything. It's steadfast, loving kindness for David, and of course, but for David means for the nation of Israel. Maybe if we're for comparison's sake, if we could think for Paul, the key word is charis in the Greek, charis, the word grace in the Body of Christ Mystery Program, Israel's prophetic program, the key word is hesed, steadfast loving kindness that comes to the nation of Israel through the Davidic covenant, which provides the mechanics of salvation for the nation. God promised to David, out of his steadfast loving kindness, he himself would enter into the line of David and come and do what no other Israelite could do. He would come and he would be their redeemer, which is what he's doing now as he goes to that, and he's gonna, which will be fulfilled at the cross. Then at that tribulation and his second coming, he will be their deliverer, that he'll deliver his friends, and he's going to avenge them of their enemies. He's going to destroy their enemies once and for all. Then he's going to usher them in that king. He's going to be their king and their blesser in that kingdom. That's the Macau Israel's, National Israel's salvation package, the mechanics of it. And it runs on hesed, God's long-suffering, steadfast loving kindness. key word. So as soon as you read that verse, any Jew familiar with the scripture, and these vain religious system wasn't, but Jesus sure was, and that would draw your attention to that Davidic covenant that would provide out of God's gracious, steadfast, loving kindness, mercy to save his people. And that once and for all, that demonstrates the bankruptcy of the nation. If they were in line with God, if they knew what God wanted, if they knew that, they wouldn't be enforcing external regulations while people suffer and while people, from the coldness and hardness of their heart, not caring about others, not caring about the suffering. If they were in line with God, if they understood anything about what God's doing, they'd realize that Sabbath was given to restore, to refresh, to bring in rest, to show mercy. Jesus reveals the fact this vain religious system in Israel is bankrupt. That whole law, that whole Mosaic law, is supposed to be operated, regulated, not by external regulations without caring for others and their needs. That law was to be regulated by mercy, by chesed, by the steadfast loving kindness of God. And we, as the Jews, would extend that to their brethren. If they had understood that, they wouldn't have condemned Jesus and his followers. They would have come to him and asked him to restore them, refresh them on that Sabbath day. And he would have done it. But instead, they reject. Let's see what they do. We'll go to the end of the story, and then we'll go back and finish up a couple things in closing. Go to verse 14. Now, I'll just say, and we won't get to verses 9 through 13 today, but he goes and he does much the same thing in verses 9 through 13, only now instead of feeding, he's going to heal someone on the Sabbath. And he's going to show the hypocrisy of this vain religious system. But look, when he gets through all that, all this teaching on the Sabbath, what it was meant, God always meant it to be, and what they turned it into out of the coldness and hardness and unbelieving hearts, demonstrating they had no idea what God's will or what God wanted done or anything like that, even though they claimed they did. Look what they go out and do. Instead of coming to Christ and to be refreshed on that Sabbath day, to be restored in repentance and cleansing, and this is what they do. They say you can't feed hungry people or heal a sick person on the Sabbath, but look what they go and do on the Sabbath. Verse 14. Then the Pharisees went out and had a... This is on the Sabbath. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him how they might destroy him. See, what a vain religious system. They condemn someone for feeding the hungry or healing the sick on the Sabbath, but they'll gather to plot someone's death on the Sabbath. Bunch of hypocrites, a vain religious system, who are completely no understanding of God and his word and his ways and his will. And the ultimate point is here for Jesus' followers is you must not go back to them for the things of God. I'm the receptacle of all things of God. Come to me for your rest. I'll usher you into that kingdom. And in closing, let's just go ahead and look at a diagram I tried to put up here. I don't know how successful I was, but let's take a look at this. Hopefully this is legible on your screen and everything. I'm just trying to do in picture form some different types of righteousness. And I wrote three righteousnesses here. There's really a fourth one, but I'm not going to talk. I don't think I'll be talking about that, at least at the beginning here. First of all, what this vain religious system claimed to know about the law, the Mosaic law, It describes the basic human righteousness that God could expect from His creation. We have to get away from this thought of historic Christianity that's taught us that the law is hard, that the law is difficult. God made some kind of law that He knew no one could ever keep. That is completely erroneous. That lets fallen humanity off the hook. That provides the basis for religious systems that allow you to be saved by works rather than by faith, because it opens the door. If you believe no one can do the law because it's too hard, well, then God can't keep you to the requirement that you need to do it. So what do? You go to relative righteousness. You find somebody else that doesn't keep the law as well as you think you do. And then you say, well, I'm better than him, so I must be good enough for God, because nobody can keep the law anyway. See, that's just a bunch of nonsense. That's a bunch of religious nonsense. The law, the Mosaic law, is not hard and difficult. The Mosaic law is this low bar. It's the lowest bar God could set for righteousness. It's just the righteousness God expected from His human creation, basic human righteousness. Set the bar 1 inch off the ground. The reason why no one can do it isn't because it's the bar set too high. It's because we have a problem. We're the problem, not the law. We are sinners. We have sin indwelling in us. And that prevents us from even stepping over the 1 foot bar. It's not because the law is hard or difficult. It's because we are wrong. If you bring a paralyzed person, and you set the bar at 1 inch or 1 foot, is it really going to matter? He's still a paralyzed person, and any attempt to get him over that bar is going to result in failure. That's the plight of humanity. It's not that God set the bar high. It's that because of sin, we can't even produce basic human righteousness. But there's another righteousness, thank goodness. And in Israel, this is the righteousness in Israel's prophetic program. If that vain religious system knew anything about God, they would not only have known about the basic human righteousness that the law called for, they can't even do that on their own. They would have also known about Hesed. They would have known about the righteousness, the display of the righteousness of God that He's displaying in Israel's prophetic program, whereby He's saving His friends and destroying their enemies. That's Israel's national salvation. That's the righteousness revealed in the non-Pauline scriptures. That's why, we'll save that for later, but that's what they didn't know anything about that. This is what regulates that. The Hesed, the loving kindness of God, steadfast loving kindness was to regulate, was a bigger righteousness, was a more important righteousness. There's something that supersedes that law. And in Israel's prophetic program, that's the righteousness of God in saving His friends and destroying His enemies. Now, that's all Jesus was talking about in the Gospels. That's all His followers knew. That's all that had been revealed in the Old Testament. That, as a matter of fact, that's all that's revealed through Peter and the 12. When they talk about the righteousness of God, they're talking about this in relation to Israel's national salvation. But of course, we know now through our apostle, the apostle Paul, we know that there's even a greater righteousness that regulates all other righteousnesses than this. And that's the Pauline grace righteousness, the righteousness of God, not in saving His friends and destroying His enemies, but now the more fundamental, the more regulatory, the more important righteousness of God, whereby God saves His enemies because He has no friends. the righteousness of God displayed at the cross of Christ for ungodly sinners on enemy status before Him. That now becomes the regulator of all other, supersedes all other righteousnesses, regulates all other righteousnesses, is the basis for all other righteousnesses. And that's not, the vain religious system couldn't have known about this because it was revealed through Paul's distinct apostleship. But they, if they had known anything about this, they wouldn't have used the external regulations of the Sabbath day of rest to bring about increasing the time of suffering or hunger or sickness or illness or suffering. Bringing the life-threatening situations that were unnecessary just to say one day of external not doing work, they would have responded in what supersedes that, Hesed. And they would have realized God gave the Sabbath so that it might be receive rest, restoration, refreshing, enjoyment. And that's what Jesus is doing in this first part of Matthew 12. And it showed the complete bankruptcy and destitution of this vain religious system. All must come to Jesus now if they're going to participate in Israel's rest. All right, we'll go ahead and close there, and then we'll pick it up there and move on further into Matthew 12.